The following is a special America's Promise program, produced by the Lord's Covenant Church of Phoenix, Arizona. Special broadcast of America's Promise with Ben Williams will be featuring a very timely and interesting interview. Stay tuned at the end of the program for information on how you can receive material concerning this ministry. On a regular basis, Pastor Sheldon Emery is the speaker on America's Promise. And now, here's Pastor Ben Williams.
Thank you. If your electric bills have been too high lately, then you're going to enjoy my guest today. Mr. Galen Windsor from Richland, Washington, is going to explain to you why you have been paying at least 10 times the amount that you should have been paying for your electricity. In the last 2 years, Mr. Windsor has been in 77 different cities lecturing on the subject of nuclear energy, a subject in which he is a recognized expert. And in his lectures, he does some rather strange things to demonstrate that uranium and other radioactive materials are not dangerous to people, and that it takes very, very high levels of radioactivity to hurt anyone. He is a nuclear physicist. He was trained by and has worked with some of the best nuclear scientists in the world. He's one of the pioneers in the field of nuclear energy, and he has spent the last 3 decades processing plutonium from nuclear reactor sites. He has served in vital positions at the Manhattan Project facilities in Hanford, Washington, in Oak Ridge National Laboratories and Nuclear Plant in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the General Electric's Midwest Fuel Recovery Plant in Morris, Illinois, and in General Electric's Fuel Fabrication Facility in San Jose, California, and Wilmington, North Carolina. He is without question one of the world's best authorities in nuclear radiation measurement, and he is recognized by the members of atomic energy commissions of the major nations of the free world. Now, because of the importance and the complexity of this issue, I'm going to make this tape available to you so you can replay it for yourself and for your friends. If you'll write to me at America's Promise, Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona 85010, and ask for the free nuclear packet, I'll send you a copy of this broadcast, and I'll also include a copy of our most popular publication, Billions for the Bankers, Debts for the People. And this should give you a clue as to who may be at the root of the problem. Galen, thank you for taking time to be here today.
Thank you, Ben, for inviting me.
You've been traveling around the country telling people that nuclear energy is safe and that we've been tricked into an inordinate fear of atomic radiation. Why do you say that, and why would a man of your background want to get into a crusade like this?
In 1973, after about 25 years in this game, we had just finished and operationally tested the Midwest Fuel Recovery Plant in Illinois. It was ready to go to perform its mission of recycling plutonium as a beneficial fuel. After designing the central sampling system of that building so that we would know precisely what our fuel inventory was, demonstrate how we could control that inventory, I was told by General Electric that we weren't going to operate that process and that if I told the truth, I would be in trouble. That's when I got going.
Did they tell you why they were closing you down?
Well, the excuse that they gave was that it was economic infeasibility. In other words, the contracts didn't match the actual conditions. They told the world that it was not an operable process, and that insulted me. By now, we know that the real reason was that they were setting up the public for the nuclear scare. Such things as Three Mile Island accident, which was no accident, they did it on purpose.
Well, it looks like they've succeeded in scaring the public, but why would they want to do this?
Well, there are several people that didn't like to have the nuclear genie out of the bottle. the international bankers, the Trilateral Commission, were practicing an unusual restraint of trade for their own peculiar reasons. Alternate energy sources had vested interests, like coal, gas, and oil, where they already had operating facilities and a large share of the market. They didn't want the competition from this particular thing. And then there were those who stood to make a profit on waste handling and regulation. Now, there's a fourth reason. They've run the worst kind of a scam called waste dumps. And we've got governors of states, legislatures, everybody involved in where they're going to put these secured disposal sites. And it's strictly a political game.
Well, I can understand why the utilities would have a vested interest, but what possible reason would they have for creating a secured disposal site?
Well, we know it's not because of the energy that comes off this radioactive material, nor it's not because of its critical material content, fissile material content, so it's got to be something else. Perhaps it's the non-inspectability mandated by Congress, that this is a good place to put things you don't want looked at.
A secret hiding place, you're saying?
Oh, yes. It outdates concrete overshoes in the Chicago River by quite a bit.
Yes, I can see there would be some definite advantages. Perhaps you can get into that more later on. Let me ask you this. What kind of radioactive materials have you and your friends worked with at these reactor facilities?
Well, this material is what you'd call a pure quill. It's, in most cases, greater than 99% pure. So, yeah, it was hot. It gave off heat. We found out early on that it didn't really hurt us to handle it. In fact, we knew all of the rules for handling it safely, how much we could put together, what we could do with it. And one time, out in back of the Purex building at Hanford, why, we had a waistline break. Now, these waistlines took this truly hot waste material from the process to the tank farm, where we had large million-gallon tanks that were so hot that they'd boil off 15,000 gallons a day from these tanks, and we broke this 2-inch line. Well, we brought up a crane to work on the diversion box right out in the open, outside, and we were running this crane by TV, so the first thing that happened was the crane got tangled up in its own umbilical cord about the time we got the shielding blocks off and cut it. So we brought up another crane to rescue the first crane and went back in and was busy working away and almost had the thing so we could secure it. And the second crane got tangled up in its umbilical cord and we stopped it short of cutting it. Now Bill Masters was running that thing and he says, "What do I do now?" And since I was the boss, well, I took Don Curtis that was with me and we ran outside in our three pairs of coveralls and our masks and gloves and everything, and we walked right up to that crane and untangled the umbilical cord, freed it up so that the crane could finish its work, and while we were there we thought we might as well take a look inside that box and see what was going on. So we stood there and watched boiling nuclear waste boil with only 12 feet of air between us and it.
You were 12 feet from this highly radioactive material?
Yes.
And what did that do to you?
By their rules, I had exceeded their daily exposure by about a million, I would judge, by the time we got out of there. So we were standing there just watching that boiling waste boil, and it dawned on me right then that sure enough, I was overexposing those dosimeters by orders of magnitude. In other words, I was going to have to face their awful committee the next day with burned out dosimeters. But obviously it wasn't hurting me. Now, I talked to the crane operator the other day in the grocery store, and I says, "Bill, do you remember that night when we were out there working on that diversion box?" And he says, "Galen, if we hadn't worked on that diversion box, they'd still be shut down." But Bill Masters was an expert at running a crane by remote TV control. He's retired now, and he's still got his sense of humor.
Now, to those of us who have been brainwashed by the information that's been handed the public, just to think about a million times the exposure that is allowed is pretty scary, and yet it didn't hurt you. That in itself is amazing. Tell me, what other kind of radioactivity have you worked with?
Well, back at Morris, we had about 170 tons of spent fuel stored in our basin, cooling basin. I was manager of safety, so I made the rules about who could go in there, and I found out that when it was really cold outside, that these pools, perfectly clean, demineralized water, crystal clear, you could read a quarter-inch high letter on the bottom of 50 feet of water. That was an excellent place to swim. All you had to do was have nerve enough to do it. Now, this was very radioactive water. It had a known content of cesium-137. It had the fuel in it that was so hot, so recently discharged from a reactor, that it created a blue Kurenkoff glow throughout the pool. So my favorite trick was to turn off the building lights out in the basin area, get rid of all my clothes. In other words, you have to go skinny dipping in this stuff so that you don't have radioactivity in your clothes that'll tattle on you that you were using this very expensive $3.5 million swimming pool for your own personal use. They frown on that. And so I would swim for a few minutes in water that was 100 degrees Fahrenheit. That's very pleasant.
Fantastic.
Now, this really wasn't getting the desired effect, because when I went through whole body scans after I'd been doing that, if I'd showered well, why, I didn't have any residual radioactivity on me. So I said, I've got to do something better than this. So I set up a program where I was drinking a glass of it a day.
Why in the world would you do that?
To impress the rascals that a little bit of it won't hurt you. It might even be good for you.
And did you accomplish that mission?
Oh, yes, I did. When they ran me through a whole body scan in December of 1974, I made that thing light up like a pinball machine. And by the time I got out of there, everybody in the plant knew that Galen Windsor, manager of safety and analytical service, had been drinking basin water. And then when they found out that I had more cesium in them than any man that ever lived, well, I challenged Ken Ager, my health physicist back there, to find out how much I drank and when by analyzing my blood, feces, and urine over a period of time. Now, this elimination rate was well known, and so I made him retrofit that curve with two unknowns in it. No, it wasn't capricious.
In other words, you were trying to defend the industry that you saw somebody tearing apart.
That is very much the case. It was my life's blood. I had 10 years invested in that particular plant and $70 million of GE's money, and I wasn't about to lose it.
How hot was this water in this pool?
Oh, probably 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and there was so much gamma energy in it that the whole thing was glowing blue.
Okay, have you handled any other items that might be of interest to our audience?
Well, while I was on lecture tour, I found out that the one that really got the reaction was eating uranium oxide. And so when I'd pour it out in my hand and demonstrate that it was radioactive by using my Geiger counter, why, well, I'd lick it off with my tongue, and then I'd measure it on my tongue, and the gasps of amazement that come from people were compensation enough for doing it. Yeah, that.
And you have done this in 77 cities, and so you've done it at least 78 times now.
Some of the people get so upset, some of the newspaper writers, that they tend to ignore me, and they won't even report it in the press.
In other words, you've made a few enemies by doing this.
A whole bunch of them, I'm afraid.
Well, let's go back to 1979. Remember the so-called accident at the Three Mile Island project in Pennsylvania? We were told that there was a major accident, a core meltdown, they call it. Can you tell us anything about that?
I surely can. I've spent some time on that island, and I know by personal observation, hands-on inspection of all the records, that there was no accident. There was some fuel damage. It doesn't qualify as an accident, because as near as I can tell, they did it on purpose. There was no meltdown. There was a fuel rods that were perfed. But as far as meltdown, no, they have oxide fuel, and the metal that the fuel's encased in doesn't melt at the temperatures that were recorded. The temperatures just were not high enough.
So you're saying it could not have melted?
No, no way.
Why did they stop it then?
Well, it's been held offline these 6.5, almost 7 years now, to cripple the nuclear credibility in the eyes of the public, just to create fear. There were certain people out there that wanted to kill the nuclear option. And of course, there were those who wanted to create unlimited employment for themselves and access to government monies for the special interest groups.
Are you referring back to those that we mentioned earlier who are part of the waste scare growth industry?
Yes, they're pretending that it takes all of this time and this money to clean up that plant. And I've been in operating nuclear plants that were much dirtier than Three Mile Island 2. And incidentally, when I was there in 1981, one of the engineers came up to me and he says, "You get the silly rule suspended, give me a fire hose and I'll clean this place up myself in a week." And that was 1981.
Well, the obvious thing here, Galen, is that if nuclear radiation was as dangerous as we've been told, you obviously would have been dead years ago. How do you explain this, the fact that you don't have what they call nuclear poisoning?
Those of us who've worked in the industry as long as I have know that small amounts of this stuff are really beneficial to you. And I'll tell you that I had enough cesium-137 in me in 1974 that there were a few people that gasped. Incidentally, you know what the NRC did with that report?
No.
They classified it so they wouldn't have to tell the people about it. And I'd like to smoke it out so that a lot of scientific people around the country would have access to it.
If they would let that report out, it would prove that they are wrong in their statistics about the measurement of radiation.
Yes, and that they knew it at the time.
Okay, then is there any threat at all from nuclear fission?
Well, nuclear fission, these little bombs, and we can make them as low in weight as 65 pounds. So, yeah, they still will deliver a horrible punch if they're in the hands of people who will use them, and they can be used against them. Now, there's an awful lot of talk about Star Wars and things of this nature, the intercontinental ballistic missiles flying with an accuracy that I don't think they can possess, but the ones that really get my attention are these little backpackable nukes.
Backpackable nukes. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Sure. In 1964, we had weapons that were so small I could hold one in one hand, and we'd fire them out of an 8-inch barrel in a rifle on a rail-mounted car, but that's not the way they move them around now. There's actually a line item in last year's budget and in this year's budget that discusses backpackable nukes.
Budget for America?
Fiscal budget out of the Congress this year, yes. And if we've got them, you better believe the USSR's got them too.
And so the fear of intercontinental ballistic missiles is not as real as the fear of backpack nuclear devices?
Oh, that's certainly so, Ben.
Well, let me ask you about nuclear waste. Now, we've heard so much about nuclear waste that I guess that's one of the scariest things about this whole thing. Is nuclear waste disposal a real problem?
Heavens no. That plant we built in Illinois was self-contained. You never had to move anything away from it except product for 20 years before you even had to build new containers. So this thing has been blown out of proportion. There are stories out there about containers buried in the ocean that are boiling years and years later. That's entire fabrication. We could hold the stuff that's only been out of the reactor 90 days there in a cooling basin. That was what heated that swimming pool to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It didn't boil it dry.
So there are no hot containers in the bottom of the ocean?
Heavens no.
Are there any containers down there at all?
Yeah, there's lots of containers down there. In fact, there's an international business in putting them down there right now. We can't do it in this country, so we ship them to South Africa, and they put them out in the ocean.
What's in them?
That would be a good question. I've often said that if you want to stop this kind of nonsense, give me a contract, and I'll go out and pull some of them up and look. I think it would be interesting. The Congress in 1982 in the Nuclear Waste Policy Act defined reusable uranium fuel is high-level waste. Wrongly so. In my estimation, it's worth 10 times as much as platinum or gold. Oh, this is the
energy resource of the future. It belongs to my grandchildren. We need to recover it, reprocess it, and use it correctly.
So this nuclear reactor rod fuel is high-level waste?
They call it high-level waste. I don't.
I see. And this is buried in rock somewhere?
They want to bury it in the rock, but the utility owners aren't going to let them do it.
So where is it then?
It's stored in the cooling basins at each of the individual reactors at the moment. And I also know that perhaps we might describe this game of what's going on out there as who owns the plutonium and how much is it worth. And the utilities are going to play the plutonium futures themselves. They won't give title of this to the federal government or to me because I volunteered to take it and they won't give it to me. Sounds to me like there's a lot of people, greedy people, that are trying to create business for themselves, drilling holes in rock and saying we're going to throw that stuff away. They want to withdraw it from the market.
That's amazing. Well, obviously, you're not worried about your safety in respect to nuclear radiation, at least what you have told me about the past. I wonder, do you have reason to perhaps fear someone or something else that may be a threat to your life?
Yes, my life's been under direct threat since 1975, and a year ago, why the NRC Region 5 in Walnut Creek, California, issued a federal warrant for my arrest and turned out a SWAT team to get me, but that didn't really bother me. As long as I stayed away from their territory, they couldn't touch me.
They actually sent a SWAT team?
Yes, they did.
And did the SWAT team show up on your property?
No, but they got my foreman and pinned him down, and they decided it wasn't him that they were looking for. You see, they had my picture on an order. It says, "This is an irrational individual. He poses a threat to our security. Take him at any cost."
And what was the reason for them being sent?
I was about to expose the fraud. Actually, what I'd done is I'd poured some of that uranium oxide all over where they were looking for some cobalt-60. And then when they weren't impressed with that, then I ate some right in front of them, and it threw them into shock. Now, they didn't want the American people to know that you could eat this stuff, that they were air sampling all over the country and saying any amount of it, even radon, its daughter, was harmful. And here's Galen Windsor eating it right in front of two of their radiation monitors.
It sounds like we have problems at high levels of government in this country. What would you say might be some of the benefits possible from the nuclear industry if our government would take an honest approach to it?
We really haven't done this thing right yet from the start. Small mass-produced reactors located in each community producing energy to provide heat for our businesses and our homes and to generate all the electricity that we want at a price that we can afford without asking the federal government whether we may or not. Obviously, the answer to this thing is to get the federal government out of the regulatory business. This is an individual community affair, and if we have the technology, we should have these particular instruments generating our electrical power, not be dependent upon a federal energy cartel. In my estimation, we're paying 10 to 100 times more for electric power than we ought to.
That ought to be incentive to make people get on the warpath.
You would think so. Why have they knuckled under, bowing down to fears that don't exist? Lots of it is personal security, or they're afraid to be ostracized in their community, but since they did that to me a long time ago, I'm out here banging away at it. We'll have to see where it goes.
Well, God bless you and protect you, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
For those of you listening to this broadcast, if you'd like a free copy of the message that you just heard, write to me, Pastor Williams, at America's Promise, Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona, 85010. Ask for the Nuclear Packet. I'll send you a copy of this broadcast and our booklet, Billions for the Bankers, Debts for the People, and I'll include some information on how you can order an informative 2-hour videotape of Galen Windsor in which he gives much more information than I could put into this one broadcast. This personal account by nuclear energy veteran and expert Galen Windsor is just one more indication that there is something wrong here in America.
Why is it that America's government would hold her back from progress and scientific improvement? Does someone want America to fail? Well, it is the stated purpose of the Trilateral Commission that they must bring America's standard of living down to the point of matching third world nations. And now that you can place that piece in the puzzle, you may also wonder, why is it that we Americans are the target for so much anti-Christ subversion? The reason for that is that America represents the only remaining bastion for Christianity in the world. And if the Antichrist can subvert and destroy Christian truth and productivity in America, they feel then that they can possess the entire world without contest. Well, their works of perversion have already had a devastating effect in America and on Christian morality. We are becoming more and more weakened by their attacks and vulnerable to them, and we find ourselves badly in need of renewal of faith and of strength in this land. In Timothy 6, verse 20, it says, "Avoid profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so called, which some professing have erred concerning the faith." Has America been fooled by people who are false scientists, spreading lies under the guise of science? Have Carl Sagan, Jane Fonda, and others simply been spreading lies? If so, why has America been so gullible? In Romans chapter 1, verse 21, it says, "Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful." And then in verse 28, it says, "And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient." If you agree with Mr. Windsor that America has been tricked into believing scientists falsely so-called and into doing things which are not convenient regarding our energy demands, then write to me and ask for this free nuclear packet. The announcer will repeat my address in just a moment. Thank you for listening, and remember to pray for Christian America.
You have been listening to a special broadcast of America's Promise. If you would like this program to continue broadcasting on this station, please write to America's Promise, Post Office Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona. America must hear God's words preached in this hour of trial. When you write, please ask for the literature you would like. You'll receive a list of other literature available, a catalog of several hundred printed sermons and radio broadcasts on tape, and a current log of radio stations where you and your friends may hear America's Promise. Pastor Emery's address again is America's Promise, Post Office Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona, 85010. That's America's Promise, Post Office Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona, 85010. Be with Pastor Emery next week at this same time, and thanks for listening.